I was a consecrated man for 10 years. Recently, I got into a deep reflection and conversation with one of my former colleagues. He has been developing a formation program about discernment. We were part of a very conservative organization within the church. He explained to me that the only one who can know for sure the will and plan of God for a person is that person in particular. You know it in yourself, you know it in your conscience, you know it within you. I explained to him about Vine and Fig and the work and reflection that goes around in this group. He told me that we LGBT people are a mystery in the life of the church, that we shouldn't give up looking for the truth. It is like having a flashlight that with every step forward will illuminate more space, and eventually we will find the truth. Welcome to Tabardin, everybody.
Welcome to Tabard In, y'all, a weekly podcast about the stories we tell and the events we discuss while on pilgrimage as queer Catholics. I'm Jacob Flores. I'm almost at a full liturgical year as a new Catholic. Yeah, it's been... I still don't have the Nicene Creed memorized.
Ooh,
because
It's tough.
Yeah, they use the Apostles' Creed at St. James, which I bring every week.
Every single podcast. Ding, 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 ding. We got our mention. All right. Now, his fiance, Pat Gothman, coming up on 33 years as a Catholic in the liturgical calendar, not to brag or anything. And I also still don't have the Nicene Creed memorized. I did back when I was in the seminary, if that counts for anything.
Yeah, I guess.
It's been years.
I mean, yeah, that's expected.
That is expected in the seminary. All right, Jacob, what do we got on the podcast today?
All right, so first we will take a look at the judge in Michigan who was denied communion by her pastor because of her marriage to a woman. And then we'll talk about Finland's new prime minister who was raised with two moms. Then we'll look at the app TikTok, which I admittedly am addicted to. They admitted to suppressing videos from creators who were queer, fat, or disabled. And then we'll finally talk about my boy, Pope Francis, setting up his successor, or his possible successor, by naming Filipino Cardinal Luis Antonio Tagle to the top position in the Vatican. To a top position. Not the top. You get what I'm saying.
You know, it's like you moved a little closer to the corner office. We're not saying, but maybe.
He's got three more steps. And as always, we'll be closing things out by toasting our most inspiring parts of the week.
All right. Well, a judge in Grand Rapids, Michigan, named Sarah Smoleski, was denied communion at the church where she worshipped for over six decades because of her marriage to a woman. The parish is known in the diocese for its inclusive outreaches and social justice work, but when a new pastor was assigned there, he called her on the phone to ask that she not present herself for communion. A parishioner said another same-sex couple at the parish was also denied communion previously as well. Judge Smolensky said, "This is a church that is a part of who I am. This is a church who helped form my faith. Why exclude anyone when they have a sincere desire to come to God's table?"
So I first heard about this through a Medium article that was shared in our community on Slack.
Right.
And the author, Mr. Marco, who's a parishioner there as well, strongly pointed out that the pastor is being inconsistent with how they follow church teaching. In who they deny communion from.
That they're not kind of policing other folks who might be going against church teaching in some way. Right.
And so And it's just hard. It's really hard for me to look past the idea that they are most likely just denying communion to her because she's in a gay marriage and is a lesbian.
Yeah.
And I don't want to go on to, I don't want to go into the territory of like policing other sinners, other grave sinners, and saying like, oh, well,
going to
you
find
can't.
Everyone else. Yeah, yes, exactly.
So, I mean, that's not our responsibility as queer folk, but it does suck being singled out.
It does. There's no other group that is like, so in some of the articles that have come out and some of the interviews and stuff, this priest has mentioned that like there are other groups that he has had to say, hey, look, please don't come to communion and stuff with. But there is a really special emphasis that is placed on same-sex relationships and gay folks in parishes in a way that isn't quite equitable with what else is going on with other groups. Absolutely.
Yeah. And it what's even more surprising about all this is that, like the intro said, this was a very progressive parish.
Yeah, this has a history. And that's one of the things that I did love about that Medium article that you mentioned that was posted in our Slack community of, first of all, it was written by like a straight parishioner who just said, like, on behalf of the community, I don't like this. And even like, though he identifies as a more conservative person, typically, he was like, this parish has a history of being like a progressive parish that has these outreaches and is inclusive, and this goes against our history as a parish. Like this priest is new here and he's making like some big changes that goes against the foundation of the parish as a community.
Yeah. And so him being a new parish, or I'm sorry, a new pastor in this parish, is the bishop, the bishops or the archbishop of this area, of, I'm assuming, Grand Rapids?
Yeah, the bishop of Grand Rapids.
Is he notorious for being conservative?
I don't know. I don't know enough about him to know if, like, yeah, this was something kind of planned of, like, let's make sure we put, like, the young new priest in this parish that has a history of being progressive or something, or whether it was just kind of a normal appointment. I will say, like, this news item and this article and everything surrounding it, it was hard for me because, like, I actually know the pastor, Father Scott Nolan, like, really well. Like, we were in seminary together. We were roommates together when we studied abroad in Rome. We even did a pilgrimage, like, together, like, walking for a couple of weeks in Italy, which was, like, a large part of the inspiration for even the name of this podcast, Tabard In, being, like, a pilgrimage thing themed podcast. And even though we haven't been in contact for a number of years, pretty much since I left the seminary, like, yeah, he's still in Grand Rapids and is he's close friends with, or decent friends with, my grandma, who is like living in Grand Rapids. And so I still get updates on like Father Scott, and I saw Father Scott the other day and everything. So I will admit that while I'm not surprised by the fact that he did this, it was emotionally hard for me to see both him doing making this decision, and also for me to have kind of the normal gut reaction of like, man, screw that priest. This is once again the church doing this and stuff. Like, because I know the guy. Like, I know that deep down he's a good guy, and like that we've had a lot of conversations about how hard it is to make decisions like this and how it impacts people who are in the pews and everything. And like, we dreamed about being priests together. Like, those are the conversations that we had. So there's a part of me that is sympathetic to like him as well. So like, I guess I want to start off by saying, like, I think that this decision is wrong. I don't think it should have been made. The idea of turning someone away from communion. The Pope Francis really views it as something that is, communion is being something that's supposed to be like food for the journey. Like, it's not some reward for the perfect people in the pews. Like, it's something that's supposed to help you to grow in grace and perfection and to become a better person. And so the idea of, well, you're not a perfect person and you're doing X sin, therefore I'm going to turn you off from it and cut you off from it. Like, that goes against how like our Pope views communion. I don't see how turning away people from communion can do anything but like not just divide the person from like the grace of communion, but also just divide the parish. I think it's in like an inherently, like no matter, like we were talking about earlier about what if we started like pointing out the other people in the parish who were doing things wrong. Like it's inherently going to piss off and divide the parish if you started any group saying like, for the sake of, you know, your soul and stuff, I need to deny you communion. Like there's going to be people that are hurt by that. I don't know. I don't see how it's in any way productive, let alone I can't imagine what this judge Sarah is going through right now, having like a new pastor show up at this place that has been your home for 6 decades and say, like, it's not your home anymore. You don't get to come forward and participate in like the fullness of the Mass anymore. Mm-hmm. That's got to be heartbreaking.
Yeah. And I think one thing that I noticed, and I hate to admit that I came across this on Catholic Twitter, mm-hmm. But I saw a lot of tradcats or traditional Catholics posting articles. I think it was on LifeSite News or something.
Yeah.
But they're essentially like investigating the judge,
trying to find other ways,
and try to find other ways to like. Say like, see, this is why she should be denied communion.
She really is a bad person.
Yeah, and they followed her, or I don't know if they followed her, but they somehow found out that she took part in communion at a Methodist church, a local Methodist church.
Yeah, this was part of one of the other articles that was out there that was actually kind of beautiful. A local Methodist church heard this story and said, we want to have an inclusive service that invites you in. And so they held a special communion service for folks, LGBT members in the community who don't feel welcome at their churches. And they invited her. So she went and, I guess, received communion there as
but that shouldn't be like there's no need for y'all, for these traditional Catholics, these hard right Catholics to become Harriet the Spy and like look for these small reasons. And it's absurd. Yeah, it's kind of creepy.
It's gross. It's creepy. There is a small piece of me that does feel for the pastors that are put in this position. Like I'm trying to remember back to like when Father Scott, back when he was just Scott and I started seminary together, like this was like the stuff that like we were taught, and we were taught it consistently over the course of 8 years. And we were especially taught that like the entire reason that the church is falling apart is because no one will stand up for like these traditional morals that the church teaches. So like imagine getting that for 8 years in a row, and then you're finally told, go out into the world and be a good priest. And you're presented with, you know, somebody who does go against. And I don't think it was the right decision. I wish that he had gotten to a place where he could have listened more, listened to the community more, and been a little bit more worried about not just the scandal of a queer person coming forward and receiving community, but also like the scandal that it's going to cause for all these people who see a person being denied communion, who they believe should be there and is a part of the church and has been there way before he ever got there. So it's hard for me to, I'm not saying I completely think that like like he's the real victim in this story by any means.
So are you saying that he may be in a dilemma where he's trying to toe the line of the church, but also trying to figure out like how do I approach this?
Yeah, I would admit. I mean, I haven't had any conversations with him about it, but I imagine, like, I think he's being genuine when he says in those interviews that like this was a really tough decision, that there's a lot of things that he's been handed that point in the direction of he's being told she should, and being told from an authority that she should be denied communion. So I think this is much more on the bishops than it is him. Like, I think that this whole situation like has been put in place by bishops who are trying to make these big political wedge issues into a bigger deal, have staked the morality of the church around these issues and not around issues of equity and racial equality and all these other things that are going on in our country and in our world. And that it is like, this is what he has received as his formation for, you know, close to a decade. So I'm like, I don't think it's entirely his fault for just taking up what and following through on what he's learned.
So are you saying, so if you, say you didn't know the pastor personally.
Right.
Would you feel the same way?
I don't think that I would. I think this is, and I don't know if it's a good thing or a bad thing. I think this is coming from the benefit
of knowing him.
Of knowing him mm-hmm. and having a bit more of a, just like a realization of like, oh, this didn't come out of nowhere. This didn't just come out of a place of like just right. pure bigotry. Like somebody has been consistently telling him this
but
for a very long time.
He also may have, you know, agreed with those teachings all along. And,
oh, entirely. Yeah. I'm not saying like secretly he has been disagreeing and he, you know, like I think.
I understand your perspective of like giving him the benefit of the doubt of like, okay, this is something that has been drilled into his head for 8+ years.
Yeah.
And especially with the environment that we're in, with a lot of the juxtaposition of people on the left and on the right within the church and infighting.
Yeah.
I get that, but also I feel like, yeah, but he did take a stance. He put mm-hmm. his foot down and said, mm-hmm. I'm making this decision. And I'm not saying he's pandering, but he is siding with those on the right who are saying, like, I follow all of the church's teachings.
Claiming to anyway.
Exactly. But, you know, you see what I'm saying, though,
yeah.
right?
Yeah.
It's tough. I agree that it's tough, and it's not, you know, not every priest who's denying communion is malicious. I don't know the guy. I don't know what's in their heart. So it's not my place to judge, but shitty situation for all.
Yeah, entirely.
Whew, that was heavy. One of these. Sanna Marin, or Marin, the newly sworn-in prime minister of Finland, is 34 years old and the daughter of two moms. She's the third female prime minister in Finland's history and is a part of a governing coalition led by 5 women, 4 of whom are under the age of 35. Being raised in an LGBTQ household helped influence her values as a politician, she said. For me, people have always been equal. It's not a matter of opinion. That's the foundation of everything.
I guess you don't fully realize just how much our country, the United States, is led by just like especially older and especially men, like until you kind of see what other countries look like and have these moments where it really just showcases that like our representation just skews so far outside of what the country actually looks like having the opportunity to see 5 women being like the leaders of this country is like it's fantastic and it's exciting to see it, and it's depressing as hell then to like come back and and see like
what our House of Reps look
yeah
like. Yeah, I totally agree. Do you remember when Wonder Woman came out?
Yeah,
and like little girls were just like so excited, dressing up, lining up to go see the movie. Like
right.
I don't identify as a female, but I can feel that excitement and that visibility. And it just means a lot for everybody overall in general.
Yeah.
So, yeah, this is great.
Yeah, she's currently the youngest head of state in the entire world.
Mm-hmm.
I guess it was funny. My first instinct when I saw that she was now 34 and being sworn in to lead a country was to be like, whoa, that's like, is she old enough? Does she have the experience needed to run an entire country? And then, like, I guess I stopped and I was like, I had to catch myself and say, well, why, though? Like just because she's basically our age, and I know that we're not ready to lead an entire country, like, but that doesn't mean that she isn't. That doesn't mean that she hasn't had a lot of other life experiences. She's been involved in government for a good number of years. Like, I'm confident that she'll surround herself with good people. And the fact is, like, old men, especially in our country, have been running things for a very long time, and they've managed to fuck everything up. So, like, I'm excited to see what she does, and I hope that like her perspective and her experience will, you know, mean that she's able to do a lot more. And I'm just inspired to see young women leading an entire country.
I agree.
So up until September of this year, viral tech giant TikTok was actively suppressing the videos of queer, fat, and disabled creators out of fear that they were, quote, vulnerable to cyberbullying. Them magazine reports, the social media company instructed moderators to find users who are susceptible to harassment or cyberbullying based on their physical or mental condition. These creators were then marked with a Risk 4 designation, meaning their videos would only be available to view in the country where it was uploaded. TikTok also kept a separate list of special users who were considered to be particularly vulnerable. Many of the creators on this list made videos with the hashtags fatwoman or disabled, or had rainbow flags and other LGBTQ plus markers in their profile. TikTok moderators marked these creators with an auto R, which meant that their videos after hitting a certain number of views would be banned from TikTok's algorithm of suggested videos that appear in every user's For You feed.
Okay, so these moderators, are they based in China or here in the States?
I didn't see it in the article listed.
Okay, so I can see if it was based in China, there would be a bit of loss in translation, culture differences, and not understanding what actually is okay and what's popular or normal here in the States.
Which is an issue we've seen with social media moderators on Facebook and Twitter and everything, even here in the United States, where it's just like not getting internet jokes and things like that has been an issue with some of these contracted moderators, let alone somebody in another country.
So from the sounds of it, it seems like they're trying to maintain a brand image, if that's what you want to call it, which excludes queer bodies and bodies that don't fit this idea of being social media worthy.
Yeah,
I feel like social media often has great intentions, but somehow it always backfires and cements these ideas of discrimination.
It's like there's always this like brief blissful period when something new, especially social media, is created, and people kind of like get a glimpse of how to use it for like just creative, goofy, and even sometimes inspiring ways. And then like you always then reach the next point where it starts getting controlled and commodified, and suddenly it becomes gross very quickly.
This is why we can't have nice things.
This is why we can't have nice things. Exactly.
Yeah. So I've also read articles about TikTok banning users who speak out about Muslim issues, specifically regarding Uyghurs in China.
Yeah, because TikTok is owned by a Chinese
company.
Exactly,
yeah. Okay. It leaves me speechless. And how is this still happening?
I don't know. I mean, let's give them the benefit of the doubt in their kind of corporate rationale for why this policy was out there, and say like their motivations were actually okay. That really what they were trying to do is that they were aware that like bullying is a real thing, and they wanted to protect these groups because they're especially vulnerable. Queer people, fat people and people with any other kind of like, you know, mental issues or anything like that. Why just censor the groups that would be the ones bullied?
Are
Why
doing
not
the bullying?
Put your effort into kicking those people who are doing the bullying off of your platform and being like, they are the ones who are actually toxic for the platform.
It's backwards, right?
It's entirely backwards. Like, in fact, the crazy thing is that like if they had put an effort into lifting up and showcasing the voices and the bodies and everything that they are worried about really hiding, that would go so much farther into helping normalize and create a safer platform for everybody, let alone those people, than if they had just tried to like quarantine them and hide them.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah, I could see this being very tricky since they're a China-based company and we don't have the same social normalities or social norms and same constitutions that protect certain things like free speech.
Yeah, entirely. I mean, the article did say that TikTok has updated their policy and like they're not going to be suppressing their videos in that same way. I do hope, though, that whatever they move forward with policy-wise, that is going to be a whole lot better than this. Yes, social media, it's a really ugly place at times, but if they really care, they are making way too much money off of that app to sit back and not put a real effort into trying to actually protect those people instead of just silencing them.
Yeah, and honestly, I don't expect queer bodies and larger fat bodies to stay quiet. This is not happening in 2020.
No,
trust
not
me.
At all.
In a major move, Pope Francis named Filipino Cardinal Luis Antonio Tagle as prefect of the Congregation for the Evangelization of Peoples, which oversees the work of almost one-third of the world's 4,000 dioceses. Gerard O'Connell wrote, "Cardinal Tagle is very close to Pope Francis and fully shares his synodal vision of a missionary church and his concern for the poor, which is also reflected in his own lifestyle. This closeness was visible when Francis visited the Philippines in 2015 and celebrated Mass for the victims of Typhoon Yolanda in Tacloban, and then in Manila, attended by some 6 million people, the largest number ever seen at a papal Mass."
That's crazy. That's still hard for me to contemplate 6 million people.
Yeah.
At a Mass.
6 million.
It does show you like just what how incredible like the faith and the devotion of the people in the Philippines is, though, to the Catholic faith and how much they do love the Pope. I would say this announcement, I think it's exciting to me for a couple of reasons. One, like Cardinal Tagle, he's like this very humble and deeply pastoral bishop, and that's exactly the type of person that we need in a major, like, top Vatican post like this. Bureaucrats are the ones who are typically put into these positions, and I think it's led to a deeply stale and problematic a Vatican. There are a lot of folks who you kind of watch Rome and stuff that are saying that, like, this is kind of Pope Francis tipping his hat as to who he would like to be his successor on some levels, kind of the way Ratzinger was brought under the wing and given a prominent position under John Paul II before becoming Benedict XVI. I don't know. That's Vatican intrigue stuff is kind of slightly interesting, but it's exciting to see him given a really important role that's going to have a big impact on the church. Cardinal Tagle, he's got a weekly TV show reflecting on the Sunday readings. It's viewed widely in the Philippines, but also all over the entire world. I went and looked up a clip of it on YouTube. It's not exactly like binge-worthy TV content, but it, like, I don't know, the fact that he's also putting effort into a TV show that's got a reflection on the readings and stuff, like, that shows to me that he at least does care more than just for the folks who are showing up on Sunday. Like, he wants to be able to reach and offer something to the folks who aren't able to make it Mass or are not at a place where they're comfortable going to church and stuff. Like, he's got a heart for the folks who are a little bit harder to reach. And to me, that's really important right now.
So what are we toasting this week, Pat?
I'm toasting Nancy Pelosi. This isn't a politics podcast, but I do want to raise a glass to our fearless leader who is officially impeaching the man she has said that, well, as a Catholic, she doesn't hate. But it is about damn time. When she was asked how she handles so many people hating her every day, she said, "I eat nails for breakfast and then I go to work." So cheers to the woman saving our democracy, Nancy Patricia Pelosi.
This week I'm toasting Randy. Randy is Patrick Weston's dad, the other Patrick. A proud union member and proud papa of a wonderful gay Catholic angel baby. He is a devout listener of Tabard Inn, and we thank him.
Thank you for listening, Randy. Cheers, Nancy and Randy.
Cheers.
All right, y'all, that is it for us on Tabard Inn. You could support the podcast by leaving a review on Apple Podcasts. It goes a really long way to helping other folks who might be able to be helped by this podcast find it. Happy impeachment, and thanks for listening, y'all.
Bye.